Jesus is telling them what's coming. He's saying that he's going to be delivered, condemned, mocked, flogged, killed, and will rise after 3 days. So he lays it all right there in front of him. And that is what's happened right before James and John come to Jesus and say, "Hey, can we sit right next to you in your glory?" And then Jesus, out of that, teaches that to be great, you have to become servants. To be first, you have to become slaves. And that Jesus came to serve by giving his life as a ransom for many. And so that's in the passage that was just read. But if you go a little bit earlier to Mark 8:31, you see again that Jesus is predicting what's coming. He's announcing that he will suffer, that he'll be rejected, that he'll be killed, and he will rise after 3 days. And again, so Jesus says that in 8:31, and then in 8:32 and 33, the immediate response of Peter is, "Oh, that can't possibly happen." Peter actually rebukes Jesus and says, "Stop talking like that." So then what does Jesus do? Jesus says the famous words about, if you want to follow me, you have to deny yourselves and pick up your cross and follow me. And so there's what happens is he says, this is what's going to happen. I'm going to suffer. And then somebody doesn't understand. And then Jesus teaches on discipleship, very much the whole servanthood, first must be last, the suffering that's involved in discipleship. And it happens again in chapter 9, verse 30 and 31. Jesus says, he'll be delivered, he'll be killed, he'll rise up after 3 days. And then right after that, in 9:32, we're told again, the disciples don't understand, and they're afraid to ask him about it. And Jesus teaches again that the first must be last, and that those who receive children in his name, they have to receive him the way that they receive children. And so there's this theme that's running through Mark 8, 9, and 10. And it's that Jesus says, this is the suffering that I'm going to endure. The disciples don't get it. And then Jesus does some teaching on what real discipleship is, what it really means to follow him. And that is what's happened in today's scripture as well. They don't get it. Over and over and over again, they don't get it. It's not even really just a comprehension issue. It's almost as if they don't even hear Jesus. As if Jesus says these words, but they weren't paying attention because they were busy thinking about other things or having their own little side conversations. Here Jesus is, in today's passage, Jesus is both literally and figuratively on the road to Jerusalem, where all that he's predicting is going to happen. Jerusalem's the place where he's going to be condemned, mocked, flogged, crucified, all the things that we know so familiarly in our faith. This is the same Jerusalem that his disciples are going to be in when they deny him, when they abandon him. Jesus knows what's coming. He knows that his life is going to end with the cross, but Jesus doesn't run away from that. He doesn't change the things that he teaches or the way that he behaves. In Philippians 2, we read a portion of that at the beginning of the service. It's put this way, that Jesus humbled himself, that he became obedient even to the point of death, even death on a cross. But the disciples don't get it. That's a running theme through all the Gospels, really. The disciples just don't get it. They don't see it. They maybe don't even hear him when he tells them what's coming. Instead, James and John, they're talking about amongst themselves and eventually ask Jesus to honor them with positions of power and prestige. They're imagining the kingdom that Jesus kept saying was near, a kingdom that would rival the Roman Empire. They're imagining a kingdom like the one of old that Solomon was king over, that all the other nations around them feared and made treaties with because they were such a powerful kingdom of Israel. And that's what they're imagining is the kingdom that Jesus is bringing in. They want to be right up there at the top beside Jesus. But it's not just James and John that are imagining this. I think they get a bad rap as being, well, why didn't they get it? It's not just them who are conspiring to be able to be at Jesus' right hand. When the other disciples heard what James and John had asked, they were angry. I don't think they were angry because how dare they, how presumptuous of them. I think that they were angry because they hadn't thought to ask first for the privilege. Have you ever played shotgun? Do you know what I mean by that? When we were kids, there were four of us growing up in our household, and on the odd occasion, we'd all be getting into the car, but only one parent was in the car, so one parent was driving. It meant that the front passenger seat was up for grabs. And that seat was the best one. It had the most leg room. It was just the best place to sit, was the front passenger seat. And so what happens is, as when you're all going out to the car, somebody yells shotgun, and that means they get the best seat. We used to do it with our friends too. I don't think I'm surely not the only one who knows about playing shotgun. I feel like that is what the disciples were doing here. Like everybody else got angry because they forgot to yell shotgun when they were yelling at Jesus. It was James and John who were like, we're going to get on top of this. We're going to get ahead of this. We're going to nail Jesus down now to promise us that we get to be the most powerful ones with him. And the other disciples are going, oh, I wish we'd thought to ask that, because I want to be the one with the power. I want to be the one with the prestige. Don't we just shake our heads at these disciples? How can they not get it? How can they have been with Jesus all this time and still not get it? How could they have not witnessed Jesus rebuking Peter after Peter had rebuked Jesus and not get it? How could they not have heard all that stuff about children and welcoming Jesus as one welcomes children and welcoming others and being humble like children? How could they not have heard all those things Jesus was saying? How are they still caught up in this idea? Silly disciples. It's so easy for us who know how the story ends and who's maybe lived with this story for many, many, many years. It's easy for us to judge those disciples for all the things they didn't get. But I do wonder if maybe we're not kind of like the disciples. And maybe we aren't envisioning ourselves sitting on the right or the left of Jesus' throne. Maybe we're not there. Maybe we aren't even all that interested really in power and prestige the way they seem to have been. Though I would hazard a guess that most of us want at least some power in our lives, at least enough power to determine our own lives, power enough to make our own choices, to influence the world around us, to take care of ourselves without being dependent on somebody else. I think there are elements of power that all of us long for, that all of us want in our lives. It's possible that, and probably likely, that most of us aren't as presumptuous as James and John appear in the story, but we might not really be all that different. I mean, the question really is, how eager are we to deny ourselves, to pick up our cross, to follow Jesus all the way to crucifixion, all the way to death, to suffer all the things that go along on that path? How eager are we to suffer for the gospel? How eager are we to sell all of our possessions and give the money to the poor and follow Jesus? These are high, high bars that are set up over and over again in the Gospels. And I have to ask, how eager are we really to be all in that way? To be willingly carry a cross, to willingly go to the cross following Jesus? In Philippians 2, we're exhorted to let the same mind be in us as was in Christ Jesus, who, though he was in the form of God, did not regard equality with God as something to be exploited, but he emptied himself. He took the form of a slave. He was born in human likeness. And being found in human form, he humbled himself and became obedient to the point of death, even death on a cross. This is what it means to be a disciple of Jesus, to be a follower of Jesus. It means voluntarily setting aside our own greatness, our own glory, our own wonderfulness. It means voluntarily positioning ourselves with the least and the lost, with the marginalized and the ostracized. It means serving regardless of the position we hold or the role that we play in the world. Jesus said to these competing disciples, "Whoever wishes to become great among you must be your servant, and whoever wishes to be first among you must be slave of all." So I ask this morning, what does it mean to be a servant? What does it mean to be a slave? Those are two words that Jesus uses in more places than here. Now, if I'm honest with you, I feel a whole lot better about the word servant than I do about the word slave. There is so much that is ugly and brutal wrapped up in the word slave. It makes me think of hundreds of years and millions of kidnapped Africans shipped across the Atlantic to be sold to European colonizers. It makes me think of vulnerable people, children and adults alike, trafficked around the world today, sold into lifetimes of indentured service, working in sweatshops and brothels, stripped of all their dignity, all their humanity completely denied. So when Jesus says, whoever wishes to be first among you must be slave of all, those are the images that come to my mind. And I hate those images. I want there to be a loophole here. I want that maybe the original language meant something different. Maybe it's a translation problem. We really didn't get it. Maybe slavery in Jesus' day wasn't like it is today. Maybe it wasn't so brutal, so ugly. Maybe it wasn't really so bad as in our more recent history. But in all honesty, there are no loopholes here. Jesus said, whoever wishes to be first among you must be the slave of all. Servant is an easier word for me to stomach. Somehow it doesn't seem quite as ugly as the word slave. It seems less of a designation of property and inhumanity. But then when I sit with it for a minute, I think of those who are the servants in our contemporary context. And I've been thinking about the essential workers, the so-called essential workers who've been forced to work, often for very low wages, all through COVID, with virtually no control over their own safety and health. I think of the nurses and the PSWs and all the other healthcare workers, many of whom were overworked and underpaid well before this pandemic, who care day in and day out for those who are sick and suffering, for those who are contagious and combative, for those who didn't protect themselves from COVID and so now endanger these same healthcare workers. The word servant may be more palatable to my ears than the word slave, but I'm not really convinced that they're as different in their meaning as I'd like to believe. What does it really mean to be a servant or a slave? How do we understand those words today? And given what those words mean, how do we understand them in the context of discipleship?